The Bible says, be not deceived. Whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap.
All right, it's 4 p.m. on Wall Street. Do you know where your money is?
Welcome to Financial Issues, where we align reality with truth. Conservative talk radio you can count on. Financial issues that you need to know.
We face a disintegrating economy, a weakened defense, and an energy policy based on the sharing of scarcity. We will simply apply to government the common sense that we all use in our daily lives.
Now, here's your host, Dan Celia.
Welcome back to Financial Issues. I'm Dan Celia. It is great to be here.
One of the things many, many years ago, going back probably 28, 30 years ago, I remember making the connection between my faith. I was a relatively new believer at the time. And making that connection of faith is, how can I pray for these kinds of things that are going on, or pray against certain things in the world that are going on, certain things that are happening, and put other people's money and my own money into the very things that are supporting that cause or that corruption or those things that are grieving the heart of God. And when I remember distinctly when that light bulb went off and me thinking, how am I ever going to change this? I was managing hundreds of millions of dollars. And I did, and it took a long, long time. We didn't have the technology then that we have now in order to hunt down and figure out how to have biblically responsible companies. It was very, very difficult, and it took an enormous amount of work. But we did it. And because I believe that we as believers should not be compartmentalizing any part of our life. We can't compartmentalize any part of our life. We have got to include God in all that we're doing. We can't be Christians on Sunday. We've got to be Christians at our job, at our workplace. We can't compartmentalize. And men especially are famous for doing that. It's what we do. So here we are with this ministry, helping you not to do that, at least with your money. So we're excited that God has allowed us this opportunity to do it. Sam is asking, what is the best way for me to leave money to my children without them being heavily taxed? Well, Sam, there is no federal tax on the money that you leave your children, right? So you know that now. President Trump did away with that. There's no taxes, so you don't have to pay any federal tax. Now, I don't know what state you live in, but every state is different when it comes to that. So here in the state of Pennsylvania, I believe it's only anything over, I think it's $500,000, do you have to pay a probate or an estate tax on. So, but every state is different. And so you need to find out from your state, whatever state you live in, what the deal is. So there shouldn't be any taxes to be concerned about. The legal fees of settling an estate, if you're using a lawyer, are going to be a lot heavier than any tax you're going to have to pay. All right, let me go to phones. Let me go to Lynn. Lynn's calling us from Florida. Hey, Lynn.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm a little bit embarrassed about explaining my situation, but I guess other people feel like me. But I'm in my 60s, and I guess we didn't really plan on getting old, but here's our situation. We have a home in Orange Park. We paid $153,000 at the height of the real estate market. Now we owe about $100,000, but then they gave us some kind of a government loan or something of $25,000, so that we have to pay back when we sell the home. But we also own another little home in St. Augustine. We owe about $55,000 on that, and we have a renter in there. We've had that for about 5 years now. So because we don't really have retirement income other than I'll get like a lump retirement when I retire from the county, maybe about $40,000, and my husband doesn't have retirement, I'm concerned about if we sell this home and pay the mortgage off on that home and then retire over there or continue to work, but at least we won't have a mortgage to pay for because we're in our 60s. I'm worried now about any taxes we'd owe on selling this house and doing that. And do you think that's a good idea to do that? Or we may not like it there, and so I'm thinking maybe we should just rent this home. But then I'm afraid that the economy is going to go bad again, and then the value of our home is going to go down again, because right now it's probably about 160, but it did go down to about 95 at one point in the last, you know, since we bought it in 2005.
Yeah. So, you know, the uncertainties of the economy is the most difficult part to try to figure on. You won't pay. So let's say you sold, you sold this house that you're in now. You're not going to have to pay any tax on that sale. But say you keep it as a rental. You moved it to St. Augustine, and after a year you decide you don't like it. You won't have to pay any tax on anything except for the St. Augustine house. So you won't then. Let's say you sell the house you're in now a year or two from now, you won't have to pay tax on it because you've lived there 3 out of the last 5 years. It was your residence. So you won't have to pay any tax on that. It won't yet be considered an investment property. So I wouldn't wait 2 years. That's getting a little close. But I would say you'd have a year and a half to make your mind up whether you want to sell the house you're in now. So that gives you a little leeway. I also would say to you, based on what you've told me, that you should keep one of them because the rental income will be a good supplement to everything else that you have when you do retire. And it wouldn't make sense to not keep one of them as a rental if you can manage to do it so that you can count on, you know, that rental income. Obviously, your risk there is that if the economy goes bad, you might not be able to get a tenant. And that's always a risk. But that might be something that you want to consider.
Okay, I appreciate that. Do you think it's a good idea to take my retirement, which will be about 40, if I do retire, then I get that money, because it's in an investment in the state of Florida, and pay off the mortgage on that smaller home?
No. And not unless it's burdensome. So if the mortgage on that smaller home is going to be really burdensome for you to keep until you get it paid off, then, you know, maybe it may be worth doing it. But here's the thing, that money that you're getting in that the payout from the municipality or from the state, that money you're getting, you're never going to replace that. You can't replace that because now you're not working. You're never going to get that back again. And I look at that money and I say, you know, if you were to ask me what to do with that, I would say, put it in a CD and don't touch it, because that's your emergency fund that you may need someday in retirement when neither one of you are working. And I wouldn't mess with that. And I like the fact that you have that for emergencies. So, and if you don't have it for emergencies, you use it for this other thing, you're now getting out of your income accumulation phase of your life, and you're not going to be able to build it back up again.
Mm-hmm.
So I look at the mortgage as a savings because it allows you to preserve the savings that you have. Does that make sense?
I do feel, though, that with us not having other income other than Social Security, that it probably, I would feel more comfortable if we didn't have a mortgage payment.
Okay, so if it's burdensome, if mm-hmm. it's going to be burdensome, then yes, go ahead and do that. But okay. you're using maybe emergency savings, so if the air conditioning goes in the house, you may be ending up getting in debt in order to fix it.
Have a little cushion there. Some money put aside for things like that.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's fine. Good question.
Okay. Thank you so much
for
your help. I greatly appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you, Lynn. I'm glad you called.
Welcome back, Financial Issues. We're going to get right to phone. 610-363-1110. 610-363-1110. Let me go to Shane. Shane's calling us from North Carolina. Hey, Shane.
How's it going, Dan?
Good.
Hey, I've just got two quick questions. I'm a young person. I'm 29 years old. I've been medically retired from the military, so I have that source of income. I currently work for an employer that offers retirement, and I'm paying into that, and I have a 401k also. But my question was, what are your thoughts or ideas on investing into precious metals for long term? And what do you make of it when the price of those metals spike like they did after the 2008 recession?
Well, that spike didn't last real long, but right after the 2008 recession, there were people, you know, again, it was not a flight to safety. It was much more driven by central bankers. And I don't mean the Federal Reserve, mostly foreign banks. So we saw a lot of buying going on as some sort of hedge or protection by some central banks. So China, some of the Eastern European nations, and others, Russia, you know, buying up some gold, taking it off the market because of what had happened. And in their case, they were anticipating. Remember, they lagged behind us going into recession. So they were preparing for that. They knew what was going. They knew it was coming. Unlike we got hit by a little bit of a surprise there after the October Lehman Brothers scare. So that's what it was. This time, gold is spiking. Some would say, and I'm just throw out my observations based on what I've been seeing. But so some are saying, yeah, this is inflationary. Gold is a safety trade. And we see people flocking into gold like they always have for the last 75 years, that it's safety. They're going in there for safety. I would disagree with that. We are seeing what we're seeing right now is, again, mostly Asia, China, Hong Kong, Taiwan, those three alone, begin to hoard gold. They're hoarding it. I don't know if this has been in the media or not. I guess I should know this. I don't. But I know for a fact, because it's been in data, it's just not been in the media, that China has banned all gold from leaving China. So no gold can leave China right now. So all of that has put some fear in and they're hoarding it. Now, the reason China did that was because they don't want their wealth leaving the country, which is going to happen anyway. They're not going to stop it. And it's already started to happen. So what they did was to, instead of allowing their corporations or their billionaires take the wealth out of the country by converting it to gold, that's often how they do it, they've banned that, so they're not allowed to do it. So now they are going and converting it the best way they can to U.S. dollars to take it out of the country, hence our bond yield dropping and the inflows into our bond market, our U.S. treasuries. So all of that has impacted the price of gold, because what it's done is perceived, I don't really think it's an actual, but a perceived loss of supply of gold at a time when there is demand. So, you know, it's a little bit of a different circumstance than it was after 2008, but nonetheless, that's what's happening. Gold has become very geopolitical driven.
In a lot of ways, I don't like that. I'm not a fan of precious metals. I am particularly not a fan of precious metals for somebody as young as you, because, you know, for every time somebody says gold, you know, is outperformed a stock or the markets, I can give you literally off the top of my head 200 companies that have outperformed gold every single year for the last 32 years. I mean, it is ridiculous. It's the dumbest statement. I mean, I know what they're doing. They are comparing, I'm making this up, by the way, this date, these dates, but they're comparing gold price on March 5th at 2 o'clock in the afternoon in 2010 to the market on October 7th, or no, I'll use a real number, to February 2nd, 2008. That's what, or it's 2018. That's what they're comparing it to. And so, you know, you can make a case for the indice, yeah, dropped. What they don't compare it to is on February 2nd, when the market crashed, it was recovered on February 15th. They don't say when gold crashed, it took 20 years to get back up to it, what it was. I don't know why anybody that would want to invest in any speculative commodity. Somebody's mad right now because there's a guy that always hassles me when I say speculative commodity. But that's what it is. But I don't know why anybody would want to invest in any investment. That I wouldn't invest in a stock that has taken, had periods of time where it took 20 years to recover from its last loss. Maybe it was back in the 70s. Maybe it was back in the 80s. Maybe it was back in the 90s. But I wouldn't invest in that because something's wrong. Something's wrong. I would have to really check the fundamentals of that company, what they do, how they do it, why they do it. But yet we'll do that with gold all the time. We think of it as a safety play. But just like China said, hey, all your gold. Now, in China also, it's forbidden to own silver. You can't own silver in China because they need it for all their electronics, and they don't want people hoarding it. So just like China did it, a communist regime, we don't even have to pass legislation to do it because we have a law in the book from 1935. We can just say at any given time, if we wanted to, that you can't trade gold. You have to stop trading gold. You can't do it anymore. And that so-called alternative currency is no longer viable. And that's what would happen if the sky falls. If we have an economic Armageddon, I tell people all the time, if you think that your gold is going to save you, you are living in the twilight zone and just are buying into all the blogs and all the gold salesmen. Because let me tell you, there is no way on God's green earth that the U.S. dollar is going to collapse and then the government is going to allow an alternative currency to collapse it even further. It's never going to happen. It's not logical, and they're never going to do it. And so what everybody that's hoarding gold to protect them for that, and I'm not saying you're going to do that, to protect them from that, is going to be getting rid of that gold on the black market for anything they can get so they can get some of the worthless dollars they were trying to avoid in the first place. And people just can't grasp onto the concept, the logical concept of that. They hold on tight to the illogical idea of what's going to happen. Now, I will say this. Will gold be, I don't know, $10,000 an ounce? Yes, it will be. That part of it is true. Will be $10,000 an ounce? Yes. But unless you can get on your private jet and get to Hong Kong or somewhere like that overnight before it collapses there and sell it, you're not going to get $10,000 an ounce for it. It's not going to be $20,000 an ounce. It's worthless if you can't get rid of it and you can't use it. So I would just tell, and I would say this to you or any young person that wants to buy it. If you are buying a speculative commodity, whether it's iron ore, whether it is coffee futures, whether it's gold, and you say, I believe, you believe that this commodity is going to gain in value over the next 10 years in dramatic fashion. Because everything is pointing to a coffee shortage. Everything is pointing to a sugar shortage. Everything is pointing to a gold demand or something like that with lack of supply and all those kinds. And that's the reason. And you practice good strategies in the sense that it goes up $20 an ounce and you sell it and take a profit and you actually make money from it. In 2013, I sold half of my gold silver. So I had some silver. It was probably 2% of my portfolio. But I don't know if you remember, in 2013, silver went up. They were predicting it was going to reach an all-time high, which would have been just over $60 an ounce. So I sold my silver at $44 because I had paid an average of about $12 to $13 an ounce. I sold it for 44. Now the silver I have, I basically don't have any basis on it. I don't care what it does, but I took the profit and I got rid of it. But we don't do that. Now it went up to 58. So I could say, oh man, I should have waited. But a good investor never gets out on the top and they never get in at the bottom. They get in on the way up, you know, and I'm saying 44, I'm not taking any chances. I'm taking it. But if you're going to do that, and if you think like that, and you have the ability to do that, because remember, gold and silver, precious metals, are a slow, they're a fast trade, but a slow sell. So you can buy it fast, but you can't sell it quick. Not if you own the physical, and you should only have it if you're going to own the physical. It's slow to get rid of. It's hard to get rid of, and it moves very fast. So it might go up to $38 an ounce tonight, but by the time you get around to selling it, it wouldn't be unusual if it were back down to $16 an ounce. And that's the problem with it. And you're going to pay a huge commission to sell it. So I don't, if you want to have some sort of, like I do, 2%, 3% in that kind of commodity, I wouldn't have a problem with it. But I wouldn't want you, as young as you are, because you're going to make a lot of money someday. You're going to have a very big retirement account, I'm sure of it, because you're starting so young. You're in a great place because you're investing now. You're going to be in really good shape if you stick with good, solid companies. You don't have to take a lot of risk to be a multimillionaire when you retire. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to Financial Issues. I'm Dan Celia. It's great to be here. We're going to digress a little bit like I do from time to time. And the reason I want to do that is I think we have someone that I know is going to be of interest to all of you. And I read an article written by Bradley Mattis, who by the way, is president of Life Issues Institute, and it was a really powerful article. It really struck a nerve with me because of some of the conversations I've had with callers in and around abortion, and I wanted to draw some attention, to be honest with you, to his ministry. And let me just say, I've never met Bradley until now, but I was moved by the article enough that I know that he can bring some testimony and some help to so many men that have suffered through abortion. Bradley, welcome. We sure appreciate you, Brad.
Thanks, Dan. Thanks for having me on.
So tell us a little bit about your work and ministry.
Okay. Well, Life Issues Institute was founded in 91 to provide educational resources for the movement, pro-life movement, and public at large. As we were doing our work, we began to receive letters and emails from fathers who were grieving and struggling emotionally as a result of losing a child to abortion. And my colleague, Dr. Wilkie, at the time, I went into his office and I said, Jack, I think we're missing something here. We're aware of women suffering, but we're missing the boat with these silent victims of men. One of those was a handwritten letter by the brother of a man who hung himself in his mother's garage because he could not deal with the grief of losing two children by abortion. And Dan, just yesterday, we were contacted via email from a man. It was on the 20-something anniversary of the death of his child. 2 days earlier, he had been in his closet with a gun. We immediately worked to find a free counselor where he was, and within hours, he had an appointment with somebody who could help him. And we understand, of course, there's death involved with abortion, and sometimes the women die, and often they're emotionally or physically harmed. But we have to understand that the men hurt too, and sometimes so much that they take their own lives.
Wow. Folks, I want to call your attention to a website called Men and Abortion, all one word, menandabortion.net. And it's a place, right, Brad, that they can go, menandabortion.net. It's a place they can go to get help. Is that right?
Absolutely. That website is exclusively for hurting fathers and the people that want to help them. There are a host of resources, many of them free, lots of information, so you can understand why you have the feelings that you do. And to let you know that you're not alone, there are millions of men out there who struggle emotionally and sometimes physically as a result of those emotional problems and don't know that it's related to the abortion. So you can request a counselor even anonymously if you want to. All we need to know is the city in which you live, and we'll be able to find a peer counselor for you.
So what year was it that you had this realization? It was in the 90s?
I would guess it was about 1995. And I began to do my own anecdotal research, and I found little islands of experts in the field of men and abortion throughout the country. And I said to these men and women that we needed to get together so that we could do much more effective work in creating awareness and then providing help. And that was the birth of the Men and Abortion Network. There were about 12 of us expert in that field. And we did a really successful job of creating awareness to the movement. And we were thrilled that the pro-life movement was so happy to get this information and began to integrate help and counseling for men and mentoring for men in many of the pro-life women centers and clinics across the country.
Brad, where can people read this article that I read? I mean, I put it out on Twitter, obviously, and folks, if you follow me on Twitter, you can find that article. I know a lot of you read it there, but where can they find this article easily?
Sure. It's at lifeissues.org, lifeissues.org. Click on the latest and then go to the archive and it'll be right there. I've written on this topic many times, so if you do a word search for men and abortion, you will get probably that article and others that I have written.
Great. It's called Abortion's Silent Victim. And it is, you know, it also has some links to some of the recent videos that have been circulating that are so disturbing. And was that something that moved you to write this article?
It was the thing, Dan, that motivated me to write that article. I saw the video and it tore my heart out, as it did probably everybody else.
Yes.
Watched it. It was a young man who was so happy about becoming a father, and his girlfriend decided to get an abortion, and he tried up to the very end to persuade her not to have one. He's kneeling, arms outstretched in front of a closed, locked abortion facility door, begging his girlfriend, Abby, not to kill their child before breaking down and sobbing. It was just heart-wrenching, but it's very representative of what a lot of men go through, because legally they have no recourse in whether or say so in whether or not their baby lives or dies.
Do you know if there's ever been legislation put forth to give the men? There has been.
And yes, back in the 90s, it went to the Supreme Court. It was called the Casey decision. It involved a c- couple of various different aspects of protections regarding abortions. And the court, Supreme Court, struck down a requirement that a husband married to the woman who's going to have the abortion just simply be notified before she has the abortion. And the Supreme Court struck that down.
Under the grounds of it's just the woman's right and only the woman's right, I guess.
Absolutely, yes. Their right, so-called right to privacy. And what we have to understand, it's common sense. For every baby conceived, there's a man involved, there's a father. And we're very concerned about the rights of the mother, but we also have to understand that we need to balance that with the rights of the father.
You know, I guess it makes me wonder, and I know so many people in Washington, and I thought about asking you that question to kind of see where things are, but from a legislative perspective. But it seems to me in the environment that we are in today, with the Supreme Court being where it is and being a president that has been helping our religious freedoms in a dramatic way, that if maybe this would be the time, of course, it would have to get through a House of Representatives that would not be for that. But it just sounds like a natural step for us to take, maybe try again at a certain point in time.
Well, we have to realize that the feminists will go apoplectic if we advocate for fathers' rights when it comes to so-called choice. Not only do we have the Democrat-controlled pro-abortion House, we also, Dan, have to get past the Senate with a veto with a two-thirds majority,
right,
to get over a filibuster. So we have to do those things, and right now it doesn't look really good.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, it's sad. Folks, menandabortion.net, menandabortion.net. And will they be able to find a counselor in their area through that website, Brad?
Absolutely. There'll be an obvious spot there where you can find a peer counselor. Click on that. You don't even have to give your name if you want to remain anonymous. The more information you do provide, the better assistance we can give you. But your privacy is a priority with us. We understand your pain, your anguish, the shame that often comes with it, the guilt, the remorse. So we are there with you to stand with you and get you the help that you need, because no guy can get through this by himself. Many have tried, many are trying, but it's just too big of an ordeal and loss to get over without some help.
The website is your website.
It's lifeissues.org, lifeissues.org.
And they can find out more about your organization going to lifeissues.org?
Absolutely.
And how they can support your work and help you with what you're doing. What a great work. Brad, we're so grateful that God's raised up someone like you and the others around you. I'm sure you're surrounded by others that are taking this issue head on. And it's not a politically correct, so to speak, area that is just going to, you know, motivate the masses to want to get behind, but so important, particularly as we think of the man as the head of the household and so many men losing their way as it is in that regard. What an important
Back in the late 70s, when I got involved in the movement, it wasn't politically correct to even be pro-life. Planned Parenthood was considered sacred and good. And the truth, shining the truth on that has changed a lot.
Yeah, it sure has. We'll continue to shine the truth on this. If there's anything we can do to help, you let us know. But we sure do appreciate you, Brad, and your work. Again, folks, menandabortion.net. If you need some counsel, some help, and certainly we want you to remember Life Issues Institute.org. Brad, thank you so much. We appreciate your time. God bless.
Thank you, Dan.
Great stuff. We sure do appreciate it. Folks, we'll be back right after this break.
The opinions and recommendations expressed by Dan are his own and do not necessarily represent the opinions of this station or any of the show's sponsors.
Okay, so here's the deal. If you want to know a little bit about oil, don't call and ask. Go back and listen to the last two segments. You'll at least learn it from my perspective for what it's worth. But there you have it. We're going to get to phones. Let me go to Vicky. Vicky's calling us from Virginia. Hey, Vicky.
Hey, Dan. I have one quick question. In the consumer staples sector, how many stocks should I have? I'm in the income portfolio. I'm retired, drawing RMDs.
Yeah, I would like you to have at least, at a minimum, three and a maximum of five or six. Folks, I just want to tell you, I'm at a little disadvantage here because I know Vicky and I know her portfolio a little bit. So don't say, well, you told that Vicky lady that it may not apply to everybody. But so anyway, I would say, you know, if you have three or four, that would be great. Four, preferably four. I think that would be great. If you have a couple more, that's fine. You know, one less, three, but at least three. At least three.
This is what I'm looking at. I had 38% in CS8080, and I was going to be going to another one in that division of 62, CS62, that you have on your buy list. And I thought, well, maybe I just better wait because I have so much in CS80. Because yeah. I didn't have my papers in front of me the last time I spoke to you.
Yeah, I mean, so that's going to really throw you over your waiting, right?
I have 38% in that one stock in that complete sector, just in that sector.
Yeah, I mean, are you up in the stock?
In that particular stock, nope. I bought when it was high. So,
okay.
So I have that one that I'm overweighted in, just in that sector again. You know, it's not 5%, so I mean, I'm not worried about that. But for that particular sector, I'm overweighted in that one stock from what I gathered the last time I spoke to you. So I was just asking.
And I think the other stock is paying more, a higher dividend, right?
The one that I have is paying the higher dividend, correct?
Oh, it is. Okay.
That's why I bought that particular one.
Yeah. I would just leave it alone, Vicky. I mean, either that or go ahead and buy the other one just for the sake of diversification. And watch CS80, and when it turns positive, which I believe it will, we're at great valuations right now. Mm-hmm. So when it turns positive, you know, I would say maybe sell some of it off, but I think that would be the way to go.
Okay, and I think, too, I had talked to you before, I was going to put my dividends into Christian Community Credit Union, and then that would be a large portion with that 4% on that CD. So I think that's what I'm going to do, and then wait to see what else you put on your buy list.
Okay, yeah, that would be great.
Okay,
yep,
thank you
great.
So much. Thank all you right. for all you do. We so appreciate you and pray for you.
Thank you, Vicky. I know you do, and I appreciate it so much. Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Ephraim, Mississippi. Go ahead, Ephraim.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, thank you for your kingdom mentality and the work you do. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
I have a TD Ameritrade, a Roth IRA, and actually I opened it at your advice a couple of years ago, and I started buying some individual, like from the Timothy plan, the large, small cap, international. And then I find out, not until I really buy thousands of dollars, I will be paying up front for those. So actually, I stopped buying some of that. But I heard you the other day talking about TPLC.
Yes.
And I would like you to, if possible, you tell me a little bit about that. How do I do that? And I mean, is it diversifying out where I don't have to do anything else? I know.
How old are you, Ephraim?
I'm 47 years old.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, it is diversified enough. that, I mean, you might want to take a look at TPHD as well. Maybe a combination of the two of them would give you some pretty decent diversification. How you do it is you just go to your, you know, TD Ameritrade account, and like you're buying a stock, click on whatever it is that you click on when you buy a stock, not a mutual fund, a stock, and put the symbol in there, and you'll be able to buy it.
All right. So do I get rid or just stop what I was doing buying the
I would definitely not get rid of that. Worst case would be to just to hold it. The nice thing about adding a little bit to it every once in a while, it really does help the fund. But I would not sell it.
All right. Thank you so much. Appreciate everything. I come from a socialist country, so I really not just enjoy, but learn a lot listening to you. And I'm sometimes at awe at how so many people in this great country want to go on the socialist way. I mean, it just blows my mind.
I know, Ivan, it's got to. And I wish all of you guys, I know I have a group of guys in Arkansas that call from time to time. They always come to our town hall meetings out there that are from Russia, and we have friends from the Ukraine and, you know, that have lived through some of those things. And, you know, I always say to them, I wish all of you could have a platform that you could get together and you know, beg people by telling them what it was like, and how so much socialism ends up into dictatorship, and that you could share those thoughts with them. And I know that you must appreciate so much the opportunities.
Here, I would like to hear what some of the people that go for it now, what they will have to say if real tyranny comes to this country.
Yeah.
It'll be fun to hear what they have to say then.
I hope
it never comes, but... Yeah. Appreciate you, Minister. Thank you so much. God bless you.
Thank you. I appreciate your comments. Thank you so much. Yeah, good stuff. You know, it's so true.
It is, and we don't realize, you know, what we have, and that last comment is so true. So, I've lived abroad, and I've seen it, and, you know, you've been to Russia, I've been to Russia. It's different. So, man.
It is. It's so hard. You know, I wish that, you know, I used to tell people, and I would have, well, you might not have experienced, I'm sure at some point in time you did. I know you were in various places. But I used to tell people when they were passing or looking at Obamacare,
right.
I used to tell people, I said, look, here's the deal. Go overseas if you're visiting, whatever you're doing, and as great as it looks. Yep. And just, it's going to take you literally 30 seconds. Just stick your head in an emergency room door and take a look at socialism.
Yep.
I don't care if it's 11 o'clock at night. I've been in four emergency rooms overseas. Now, one wasn't, I wouldn't consider a developed country.
Right.
But stick your head in there, and it's unbelievable.
It is.
And I'm talking about the socialist countries that everybody is using as examples. Yep. You know, I have my brother-in-law, I was talking with him on Sunday. He has a house in Italy, and he goes over there often. And, you know, his wife is like 23%. I don't know if she said 23 or 22. Yep. I just left countries that were 25%.
Yep.
VAT tax.
Yep.
On our food, on everything. You know, we're going to pay this VAT tax. I mean, it is people just, I wonder if some of those folks that are all for it don't, I guess I'm going to assume. Yep. For a moment, they're not stupid.
Correct.
So the only thing we can do is think they just don't know, right? Because surely if you knew,
yep.
you wouldn't be so pro-socialism.
Yep.
And,
exactly right.
And I'll tell you, and I've said this, Bruce, so many times, that if we have one more election – that is made up of Democrats only that win, we're going to have a VAT tax. And the VAT tax is going to start just like it did in Europe. In Europe, when it started, I think it was 0.2%. Right. Nobody cared. Who cared? 0.2%. It's 25% now. It's, the key is, let's get the law passed. Yep. Then we can adjust it, right? And, you know, we're going to, that's exactly what we're going to have, because here's the deal, folks. Both Republicans and Democrats are okay with VAT tax. You know, there are many Republicans that are okay with that. So they won't have any trouble. We won't have any trouble getting a VAT tax passed for 0.2% or for even 1%. It's not a problem. You know, we won't have any problem doing it. And then it can get adjusted up. Why? Because it's going to have to be. Yeah. It's going to have to be. And, you know, it's just, it's terrible. And too many people don't realize just how great it is.
Right.
You know, here, the only people that do are people like Ephraim and other people that I talk to that have lived there, that know it, that realize and understand it.
And see how much it costs for just a bucket of chicken.
It's a crazy. So. I was talking to a guy in Denmark 2 weeks ago. I met him on the street. Yeah. He and his wife were walking on the street. And he said hello to me, very good English. And I said hello back to him. And I said, where are you from? And I told him, we struck up a conversation. Sure. We had a great time. And he lived in California for years and years. And he said, if people only knew, if people only knew. He loved his country, but he said, if people ever knew.
I met a lady in Greece, same way. She worked for 25 years for a company in New York City. Wow. And then she was hawking Greek items.
We will never compromise our principles and standards. We will never give away our freedom. We will never abandon our belief in God.